Today, the final part of our Pegasus mini-series, the fallout from a massive leak that led us to hacked phones around the world. It's 5 p.m. London time, last Sunday. You might have wondered what it sounds like in a newsroom when a big investigation finally goes live.
Congratulations. Bloody brilliant.
Thank you.
What have you got for me next?
It sounds nothing like this. That's the movie version. In reality, it's a bit more like this.
Hey, it has busted. Look at that.
What's up?
Yeah.
You spent every day for months working on one thing, and someone pushes a button, and the story finally launches. And nothing really happens. But then, the hours roll by, and more stories come out.
Pegasus Project se khula hai, lekin aakhir ye Pegasus Project
hai. Piraté grâce à un logiciel espion nommé Pegasus.
And people start to take notice.
Sort of major potential here for some serious diplomatic blowback.
The opposition yesterday was up in arms. There was a lot of rockers, a lot of chaos.
Pegasus, dangerous, ferocious.
Expect more scenes such as that today because
French President Emmanuel Macron has called for a series of investigations into the Pegasus spyware case.
Nous avons donc ordonné des investigations.
El más reciente escándalo de espionaje internacional salpica también a nuestra región y a México.
Es importante la investigación que se hizo a nivel mundial.
And already the investigation has led to calls for more accountability in the cyber weapons industry.
This leak of 50,000 phone numbers and the stories it's led us to, it's made people realize that without us ever really noticing, the world changed. There are now 3.8 billion smartphones out there. They hear our most intimate conversations, hold our deepest secrets. Each one a microphone and a camera, waiting to be switched on.
The for-profit intrusion software industry is based on a lie. They say this is to save lives. They say this is to stop crimes, but it's being used every day in many different countries to spy on people who are not legitimate targets.
This week, the whistleblower Edward Snowden led global calls to act.
We have to stop this. Inaction is no longer an option.
From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the Pegasus Project, Part 5. The fight back begins against the spread of private spyware. Before we start, a warning. This episode contains swearing, descriptions of torture, and self-harm. We started this project with a meeting in Paris. There were journalists from 17 different media organizations. At the end, we parted ways and started investigating, wherever the numbers took us. For Angelique Chrysippus, our Paris correspondent, that wasn't very far from home, but it went to the heart of French power.
The biggest and most shocking revelation in France was that Emmanuel Macron, the French president's phone number, was in this leaked data, showing that he was of interest. The majority of the 20-strong cabinet in France, that includes Édouard Philippe, the then prime minister, the interior minister, the justice minister, the foreign minister, who would have been meeting with Emmanuel Macron very regularly, 14 ministers and prime ministers were listed.
One of those ministers was François de Rugy.
De Rugy is very important because at the time he was the number two in the French government. The environment minister post was extremely important.
Our team approached him and told him his number was in the leak. There might be a chance his phone was hacked.
François de Rugy was utterly astonished that this may have happened to him. And there was a long conversation that took place where he had to seriously think about whether he wanted to give his phone for analysis to the Amnesty International Security Lab, but he decided that he wanted to know that that was the most important thing.
When Amnesty tested his phone, they found traces of Pegasus-related activity. The software hadn't infiltrated his phone, but it indicated the preliminary stages of an attack. The Pegasus Project's research suggests the country that was possibly interested in Emmanuel Macron, the French Prime Minister, and almost the entire French cabinet was Morocco.
Pourquoi le Maroc aurait-il voulu espionner le président français et plusieurs de ses ministres en 2019?
This is an absolutely explosive piece of information because Morocco and France are very close friendly allies. They cooperate on counter-terrorism very, very closely. Under Emmanuel Macron, France's relationship with Morocco has flourished. It was described as a relationship that was so good, there was a total absence of clouds in the sky. But this information is going to create difficulties between these two friendly allies.
C'est naturellement un scandale extrêmement choquant, c'est une agression.
Macron's office have responded to the Pegasus project by launching a raft of inquiries. On Thursday morning, they held an emergency cabinet meeting to discuss the revelations. They're taking this very seriously. For the French president, a guy who prides himself on embracing new technology, the appearance of his number in these records is kind of awkward.
He is so interested in this new tech that he deliberately placed his two iPhones on the desk behind him for his first official portrait.
Worse for Macron is the timing.
We're in an election year in France now. This is very damaging in terms of the political debate at the moment because already we've seen opposition politicians on the right saying, hang on, was this government not really naive? Are you guys using your phones properly? How could you not know about this?
There have been similarly strong reactions around the world. On Wednesday, Nina Lacani told us that the names of 50 people around Mexico's president, AMLO, appeared on the list. In response, the Mexican government has now pledged that if there are any outstanding contracts with NSO Group, they'll be cancelled.
El ejecutivo de Andrés Manuel López Obrador confirmó este miércoles que gobiernos anteriores mantuvieron entre 2012 y 2018 varios contratos con una empresa vinculada al escándalo de espionaje del programa Pegasus.
In India, where I reported that the country's main opposition leader, Rahul Gandhi, was in the records, and that we confirmed the presence of Pegasus on the phones of other political figures and several journalists, there's been calls for a Supreme Court inquiry into the use of the spyware. Indian MPs have accused the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, of treason.
Is spying on India's security forces, judiciary, cabinet ministers, opposition leaders including Shri Rahul Gandhi, journalists and other activities through a foreign entity's spyware, not treason?
And disrupted Parliament, demanding a full investigation. In the country that allows Pegasus to be licensed around the world, Israel, the government has reportedly set up a task force dedicated to managing the fallout from the Pegasus Project revelations. Sean Walker, our correspondent in Budapest, worked on another of the week's biggest stories, that Viktor Orban's government in Hungary, an EU member state, has deployed Pegasus against civil society there, including Zoltán Varga, one of Hungary's last independent media owners.
It was a few weeks after Viktor Orban has won a new term as prime minister, and Zoltán Varga invites six of his friends, acquaintances, up to his house, which is this beautiful, huge villa up in the hills of Buda.
So the seven of them are sitting outside on the terrace on a warm summer evening.
They're drinking wine, they have some finger food on the table.
And they're discussing what Orban's victory means for the country.
As one of the participants put it to us when we went to talk about it, they were quite surprised that this dinner had attracted so much attention. He said it was basically a typical Hungarian discussion. Everybody sat down, said, fuck, the situation is terrible, and then nothing happened.
But something was happening. Pegasus Project data shows us. there was an eighth guest there that night, uninvited, potentially listening in. The records include the numbers of all seven men around that table. On the other phone we tested, we could see attempted Pegasus-related activity.
So that really seemed to strengthen this idea that this dinner had really worried someone.
Sean and his colleagues also discovered Pegasus on the phone of one of Hungary's most high-profile reporters.
So Szabolcs Pányi is one of the best-known investigative journalists in Hungary. It's clear when you read his stories that he's got great sources, both inside the Hungarian authorities and in foreign diplomatic sources.
So it wasn't a huge surprise that if authorities were going to start targeting journalists, he might be high up the list. The extraordinary thing about Pányi's targeting is that when the forensics were done on his phone, we could see, over a seven-month period, he'd been repeatedly infected with Pegasus.
And when he went and sat down and lined up all the dates, he found this remarkable correlation that on a huge number of times, more than 10 times, when he had contacted various government bodies for comment requests, just one, two, 3 days later, his phone was infected. And his assumption, which seems quite reasonable, is that once he sort of showed his hand that he was working on something to the government, they immediately jumped into his phone, perhaps in an attempt to see who his sources were, who had he been communicating with, and to get ahead of the story, which is, you know, really quite a sinister use of this spyware.
With no way to deny the digital evidence, Orbán has fallen back on his usual distractions.
So they haven't come out with any explanation of why people like investigative journalists or lawyers might have possibly been legitimately targeted. The government has blocked a meeting of the Parliament's National Security Committee, which might be able to discuss these matters. And we've just seen the usual Hungarian government sort of mix of tropes that this is all a plot by George Soros or a plot by foreign enemies of Hungary. And instead of reacting to these allegations, on Wednesday morning, we saw Viktor Orban say he is going to hold a referendum on child protection from LGBT issues.
Coming up, what's it like to see your phone number on the list at the centre of the Pegasus Project? So far, we've been telling you about the political impact of the numbers in our records, the big picture. And we keep saying, just because a number was in our data, it doesn't mean anyone tried to hack it with Pegasus. Without forensic analysis, we just can't say that. NSO says the data has nothing to do with its spyware or its customers. It says it only sells to vetted governments, and it's all done legally. And if a customer misuses the system, they won't remain a customer. But each of those phone numbers that we saw in Paris, those tens of thousands that we scrolled through in amazement, each one belonged to a person. Someone who might be wondering, what does it mean to see my number on this global list? Next to some numbers linked to phones we know were infected with Pegasus. Two of the numbers on that list belong to Matthew Hedges. He's an academic at Durham University in the UK. He studies the defence policies of the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, a state that we know has access to Pegasus, that has the power to reach into people's phones, a state with a dark side that Matthew knows all too well. Where we thought this began was with you getting on a plane to go to the UAE to work on your PhD. What happened next?
So I travelled to the UAE. I was there for 2 weeks. I met my friends, did some interviews.
Matt had spent a big part of his childhood in the UAE. His dad still lived there, so it was a familiar place.
But obviously throughout that time, I had started to notice what was clearly surveillance. These two guys ordering a pint of beer or something, but not touching their beer for hours, or being followed by cars.
He brushed all that off. He didn't want to be paranoid. He was in the country doing interviews for his PhD. Nothing sus. There was no good reason to be watching him. But when he arrived at the airport for his flight back to the UK...
At Passport Immigration, I was approached by about 15 Emiratis, a few of them wearing the local Kanduras, and the rest were wearing full black outfits with masks, guns, and they told me that I was under arrest.
Where was the first place they took you?
They put something over my head, they hand-tied me, and they put me in the back of a car but tied me to the floor, and then they drove me down to Abu Dhabi. I needed to go to the toilet because they had left me there in the car for a while. And they said, yeah, yeah, fine, fine, whatever. We'll give you some time. I think it was about 2 or 3 hours. So I just wet myself.
By this point, Matt still hasn't been allowed to speak to a lawyer or tell anybody what's happening. His family doesn't know where he is. After hours tied up on the floor of the car, the agents finally come and get him.
I was taken to the state prosecutor's office, and I was put in front of him for about 9 hours. First thing I did, I asked for a lawyer. He said, well, there's no case against you. You're not under arrest, so there's no need for a lawyer. I thought at this point, I'll go through the system and I'll be on my way.
So at this point, you think there's still potential that you're going to get out of here sometime soon?
Yeah, absolutely.
When does that change?
2 or 3 days in, and this is when it gets really interesting because I gave them access to my phone. Once they had access to my phone, the tone of the interrogations went to, do you work for MI6? Would you be willing to steal documentation from the Foreign Office for us? And I was having panic attacks.
What kind of conditions were you being kept in?
It was a police investigations building. The offices have soundproofing material on the walls. They have very strong bright lights. There were bloodstains on the floor. There were, on the walls. You can hear people screaming. You know what this country does, what their justice system produces.
When your trial came, you confessed to being something called a captain in MI6. How did it get to that point?
Ultimately, coercion, threat, and survival. So there was the combination of medication that they were giving me, Ritalin to get me up, and then sleeping tablets, diazepam, antidepressants, and everything else to calm me down, as well as the interrogations sometimes being up to 15 hours. It was far more mental than physical, but the side effects of the medication directly impacted my physical well-being to the extent that I was vomiting blood. I was self-harming and trying to commit suicide. These are physical side effects from that mental harm. And then there were the threats, which were they would rendition me to an overseas military base where I'd never see the light of day, threats towards family members. They responded very, very, very badly and aggressively when I tried to declare my innocence, and they're going to make you say it one way or another. They wanted to put into context every single person that I've spoken to. They wanted to know the names of MI6 agents at the embassy in Riyadh, but also because they were then dealing and questioning me about people that I knew personally or other people that I had some form of connection to, my strategy throughout the entire interrogation process was make sure at all costs to protect every single one of those people. Who's to say that they couldn't be in the same position the next day?
As terrifying as these interrogations were, they were still better than what he had waiting for him back in his cell.
I would look forward to the interrogations because these were moments of human interaction that I had as opposed to solitary confinement. I would sometimes be left in their room for weeks. I wouldn't see anyone. When you have absolutely no way to distract yourself, there's no natural light, it's only you and your mind. Yeah, you learn a lot about yourself. That's for sure.
Matt says he was forced to sign a confession, written in Arabic. He doesn't speak that language. And that document that he signed, that was the main evidence in the case against him. His trial in November 2018 lasted 5 minutes. He got a life sentence. What was the life sentence for? What had they actually convicted you of?
I still don't have the answer to this. I understand that a case was against me for espionage due to the confession, and there was a case against me for handling secret information based on the PhD. However, this was reduced in court to handling sensitive information.
At some point, in large part because of the work your wife was doing, behind the scenes and then suddenly publicly, November 26, 2018, you learned you were going to be released.
In response to the letter from a family of Mr. Hedges requesting clemency and in consideration of the historical relationship and close ties between the United Arab Emirates and the United Kingdom, His Highness has decided to include Mr. Matthew Hedges among the 785 prisoners released. Mr. Hedges will be permitted to leave the country once all the formalities are complete.
I mean, I can't even imagine what that feels like.
Yeah. It just felt good to not be in that room, to have sunlight. And I was then taken to the British Embassy. I couldn't properly relax, of course, until I was on the aeroplane and the aeroplane was in the air. And I was put on a flight that night.
Matt managed to get out of the UAE, but what he was put through has stayed with him.
I'm dependent upon medication. I still am today.
The medication that they had been forcing you to take?
Yep, the antidepressants and diazepam and everything else.
Matt's always thought that he ended up on someone's radar after landing in the UAE. But our leaked records raise questions about that. His UK number appears in the leaks weeks before he ever left England. And then his UAE number appears shortly after he lands there. The UAE took Matt's phone. We can't test it for traces of Pegasus. So we just don't know if anyone actually did try to hack it. But Matt wonders, why has an NSO government client, one that we think is the UAE, put his numbers on this list?
It's kind of put a fire in my belly. You have to ask, what are you doing? How are you able to do this? Why are you able to do this? But then the dangerous question is really, if they're then doing this to me for no apparent reason, and as far as they got was giving me a life sentence, has it contributed to any physical harm on anybody else?
Are you concerned you might still be under surveillance now?
Yeah. Yeah. There are several things that have happened. Whilst I was in the UAE, my wife was followed in London and people taking photos of her. You start seeing anything which might look out of place. It's that feeling that you get. And it could be anything. It could be nothing.
It could be anything. It could be nothing. That's the kind of world we live in now. Maybe your phone's being monitored using invisible military-grade spyware. Maybe you're just being paranoid. That's the kind of anxiety tools like Pegasus create. You can see the appeal to authoritarian regimes. And we know they're sold to governments like the UAE. The kinds of governments that lock up academics for months with no evidence. What we've been showing you this week is part of a much larger battle that's been raging for decades, since the internet was pioneered. It's a battle for your privacy. In 2013, Edward Snowden showed us that governments, the governments that were supposed to be democratic and accountable, were secretly harvesting our data on a massive scale.
Foreign intelligence services are on alert this morning over a new disclosure from Edward Snowden. The Guardian reports that documents leaked by the fugitive security contractor show the NSA monitored phone calls of 35 world leaders.
So, people responded. The internet became more secure. We started using apps with end-to-end encryption. And surveillance became more difficult. There was a response to that too. Over the past decade, a whole new industry has developed. Companies like NSO Group have made hundreds of millions of dollars selling tools to help crack encrypted communications, exploiting defects in the security of Apple and Android phones. Snowden has called these devices a spy in our pockets. What we found has only confirmed his fears.
I think it's actually worse. What we see now are people creating an industry to go beyond the level of spying that already previously we knew existed. And now they're actually taking control of that phone fully and turning it against the people who bought and paid for it. They're all running the same software around the world. So if they find a way to hack one iPhone, they've found a way to hack all of them. And they are doing that, and they are selling that. That is a knowing, intentional, willful attack on critical infrastructure that every one of us rely on.
But it's not just Pegasus.
We're seeing what the NSO group, which is sort of the most famous of these guys, is up to. But the NSO group is only one company of many. And if one company smells this bad, what's happening with all the others?
This is now a multi-billion dollar industry, expanding into new countries every month. Over the past week, you might have looked up what you can do to protect your phone from tools like Pegasus. Snowden's answer is, on your own, not a lot.
What can people do to protect themselves from nuclear weapons? What can you do to protect yourself from, you know, chemical, biological warfare? There are certain industries, certain sectors from which there is no protection. And that's why we try to limit the proliferation of these technologies. We don't allow a commercial market in nuclear weapons. We don't allow a commercial market in chemical weapons, biological weapons. But when it comes to these digital, virulent exploitation vectors, we're not doing anything about it. We have to stop the sale of this kind of intrusion technology. That is the only way that we can protect ourselves.
Yesterday, Israel said they were examining whether spyware export rules should be tightened. Whether that materializes, we'll find out. Snowden says, ultimately, we can't just rely on governments being shamed into doing the right things on their own.
The solution here for ordinary people is to work collectively, because it's you versus a $1 billion company. You can make yourself safer, right? But we will not be safe until we change the game. It doesn't matter what flag you live under. It doesn't matter what language you speak. But we all have skin in this game.
In their latest statements in response to these stories, NSO said, quote, "Enough is enough. In light of the recent planned and well-orchestrated media campaign led by Forbidden Stories and pushed by special interest groups, and due to the complete disregard of the facts, NSO is announcing it will no longer be responding to media inquiries on this matter, and it will not play along with a vicious and slanderous campaign. We will state again, the list is not a list of targets or potential targets of Pegasus. The numbers in the list are not related to NSO Group. Any claim that a name in the list is necessarily related to a Pegasus target or Pegasus potential targets is erroneous and false." Morocco announced on Thursday that, in response to the allegations we've been discussing, it was suing Amnesty International and Forbidden Stories for defamation. Its lawyer said, quote, "The Moroccan state immediately intends to go to the French court because it wants all the light to be shed on the false allegations of these two organizations, which put forward elements without the slightest concrete and demonstrated proof." That's all for today, and for this series. All the stories from the Pegasus Project are at theguardian.com. Edward Snowden was talking to The Guardian's head of investigations, Paul Lewis. The Pegasus Project was reported by Stephanie Kirschgussner in Washington, Paul Lewis, David Pegg, Dan Saber and Sam Cutler in London, Nina Lacani in Mexico City, Sean Walker in Budapest, Angelique Christophus in Paris, Martin Hodgson in New York, and me, Michael Safi. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly and Ned Carter-Miles. Original music and sound design by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. Thanks a lot for listening. From next week, you'll hear our other new host, Nasheen Iqbal, along with Rachel Humphreys and me. As you might have seen from our coverage, this kind of work is hard, but it really matters. That's why we need the support of listeners like you. If you've enjoyed this series and appreciate our work, and the fact that it's open for anyone to access, please consider supporting us. Go to theguardian.com/Pegasus support.